With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T, or download the List app on the App Store today.
All right. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Time and Root Podcast. The greatest lacrosse podcast in all the land, all about lacrosse, featuring my buddy Coach Dane Smith from St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac, Maryland. My name is Eric Bickle. I'm one of the sports junkies on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. and NBC Sports Washington. Dane, of course, he's the real stud here. He played at Robert Morris, two-time captain, currently the head coach at St. Andrew's in Potomac. Coach Dane, how's it going, buddy?
It's going good. We got lacrosse to talk about, man. It's right. Middle of the summer. It's dog days of summer. It's what, 90 degrees every single day, it feels like. I'm melting outside. But other than that, it's just trying to find time to watch lacrosse.
I mean, I don't have a lot of lacrosse friends, right?
Yeah.
But you know, the ones that I do have, we're all locked in on the PLL.
Yeah.
With you, I mean, most of your friends are all lacrosse guys. Do you find that your group is all locked in too?
I don't have any friends when you have two kids.
Come on, man. I got three kids.
I know. You don't have many friends. No. I mean, yeah, everyone's locked in their own way. But, you know, I know I'm 100% locked in. And even like just, you know, my coaching staff, you know, those are my mm-hmm. best friends, right? The guys that I'm with every single day. So we're texting each other. We got like a coaches group chat that we talk about stuff throughout the year. And I'm right. just like, I was the other night, I sent him the, I don't know if you saw like Grant Amon behind the back pass.
Of course.
I was like, I saw it, copied and pasted, sent it to our coaches. I was like, did you see that? That's ridiculous.
That was sick. Well, then our buddy Coach Pugh also pointed out though, like Schreiber just cutting, like, and you know, like his.
Yeah. I don't care like about the cut. I like the behind the back.
The behind the back was amazing, but I mean, he like dodged to get open. Like, he had the
does.
Ball.
That's, you know what that insane. Is? I mean, I don't want to be a lacrosse nerd, but like that's the box mentality. Like,
yeah.
you know, in box, like you just like you can push off your guy and just like cut through the middle.
Yeah.
And Schreiber is just like one of the best. He is probably one of the best American box players. And so he's got that side of the
game. If you didn't know, you would have thought he had the ball. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like
he was
doing. No, I know 100%. Yeah. Yeah. And then just a spot feed behind the back. Like
rookie second game.
No, I mean, it's if look, I'll put it this way. If the guys, my teammates in college and my friends are not watching it right now, they're no longer my friends because
it's so fun,
it's sick.
Man.
You know, and it's funny because I was like, you know, you and I talked last year when the PLL came out for the first year, and I know we have Mike Rabel on, and he's, mm-hmm. You know, going to tell us, you know, kind of amazing things about what they've done to get everything set up. But like a lot of people, I was hesitant. I didn't know for sure what it would look like.
I did sense that from you, yeah.
Well, because I don't know if you remember, like, was it LAX or what was it? LXM mm-hmm. Tour. So they did something kind of similar in
that
the West
Kyle
Coast.
That was Kyle Harrison's league, right?
Yeah, it was. It yeah. was. And it just, you know, I know we had Casey Powell on the past week. It didn't go along with, like, the whole culture of lacrosse that I would necessarily want to promote. The LXM, you know, this kind mm-hmm. of rock star, like, mm-hmm. lax bro, West Coast thing wasn't totally who I am and what I love about the sport. And so when the PLL came out, you know, I had my hesitations. But just the professionalism, and maybe it's now that you're seeing, you know, apples for apples with the MLL going on at the same time as the mm-hmm. PLL, and you turn on that and you turn on the PLL, it's like, it's night and day. Yeah. And then you hear about the, you know, the testing and everything that's going on in the MLL and the disaster that they had. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's hard not to laugh.
I think you could have suited up, coach. I think you could have.
I really should have drove up to Annapolis Hotel and knocked on the door and said, hey, I'm here to play in the championship game. I heard there are five players from the Boston. Yeah, I know. I heard there were five players from the Boston Cannons that won't be playing today. Do you guys need a D-Mitty? So no, I mean, but I'm all in right now. I'm all in. I love, you know, and when it gets back to normal, I'll still watch it, but I don't know if I'll ever watch as much as I'm watching it right now.
Yeah.
Because
well, it's like no watching sports. The World Games, right? And the World
That's
Cup.
What I mean. It feels like the Olympics of lacrosse right now.
Yeah.
So like, even if I would love to tell Mike, like they should do this again, no matter what.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know what I mean?
At the end of the year, like let's say they have a regular year.
Yeah. Regular
cap it
year.
Off this way.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, you know what I mean? Or maybe every couple years they do something similar to the, I don't know. Or they do a winter version of this to kind of keep hold us over. Right.
Yeah.
You know, they have a summer lacrosse and in the wintertime they do, you know, 3 weeks of a tournament like this. It's sick. I love it.
No, it's so great. And a lot of it, we've talked to Paul and we have Mike on the show today, Mike Rabel, the CEO of, the Premier Lacrosse League. We've talked to Paul about it before, but the partnership with NBC is such a huge part of this because the production values are through the roof, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you're streaming some college game or, you know, like it's NBC quality. The announcers, even though I'm not as familiar with the play-by-play guy,
I think Ryan Boyle.
No. He's the color. I know Ryan Boyle.
Yeah.
No, the play-by-play guy.
Well, the play-by-play guy, I think
his name is. I don't know what his name is.
It's different than the guy they had last year. Yeah, it's different than the guy they had last year. The guy they have in the booth doing the play-by-play was the guy that had on the sideline last year. I don't know if that part of COVID and the other guy couldn't do it or whatever. But
I think his name is Paul Burmeister. I want to give him credit. I like him. He's perfectly fine. He's perfectly great to me.
Yeah.
And they're just totally professional. Boyle, everybody knows, you know, if you follow lacrosse. And just the camera angles and miking up the guy. I'll be honest. At first, when I heard they were miking up players, and they still do have audio issues at times. It doesn't always work, and it's a little annoying.
Yeah.
But when they do get it to work, and you get a guy's reaction right after a goal, it is pretty insane. And then, you know, when you get the Gaudettes, you know, chirping and that kind of thing, the guy's face, okay, maybe that's not what I'm looking for, but, man, that's freaking compelling.
Right, you know? Exactly. Yeah. No, it's – You know, it's funny. I have like two opinions on the Gaudette thing, like, you know, but it's all good. It's all good for the sport in the sense of like getting eyes on it, like,
attention.
You know, social media and people talking about it. As a coach, I don't like the Gaudette stuff because I feel like young kids are going to see that and be like, that's how you should play the game. And like, that's just.
Well, the cackling was really annoying, too.
Like you got to be really good to do that, and he's a really good player, but like there's really good players like Tom Schreiber that probably don't do that. You know what I mean? I could be wrong. I never played with Tom Schreiber. Maybe he talks a lot of shit, but he doesn't seem like that kind of guy. He's kind of a, you know, speak softly and carry a big stick kind of mentality. And that's the way that I try to coach our kids. And I just think it's more powerful, but more entertaining. If you want to be from an entertainment rating standpoint, you know, got it, getting cross-checked in the head and that's entertaining, especially for people that don't know the sport. Like, oh, you can do that in lacrosse. Like, that's when you get those fans. Like, oh, yeah, you get to, you know, be able to do whack people with big sticks. Like, that's what, you know, non-lacrosse people will say. So it's all good.
Also,
I think NBA.
Yeah. Well, I also just like, you know, I don't like to promote fighting. It makes me crazy. But I do like to stick up for my teammate. And that does get me going as a guy, you know. You know, I never achieved anything in sports, but I've been on a million teams. And, you know, I like to stick up for my teammate. And I like that part. And I'm sitting there, my testosterone's raging as I'm watching this. It's really compelling.
And that stuff's great. I think, like, again, I mean, I'm such kind of a – I feel like I'm a little bit more old school in that stuff. I mean, I love it from an entertainment standpoint, but like, I don't mind like the cross checks. Like for me, that's like lacrosse stuff. Like a guy's walking away from you and you guys have been kind of talking and like you cross check him in the hip. And like, that's just part of the game. You know what I mean? But then there's like the extra stuff. Maybe it's the Apple stuff or even like the, you know, throwing punches with your helmet on. Like a lot of like the Canadian guys, the Joel Tennies of the world, like, they're like, that's soft. If you're going to really do it, take your helmet off and punch the guy or don't do it at all. You know what I mean? So you shouldn't do either probably. But no, I mean, I'm sure the entertainment level is high and I mean, there's a game tonight. You know what I mean? We're filming or doing this little podcast on Wednesday. And so there'll be one at 11 o'clock tonight. And so, I mean, I'm going to try to watch every single game. I love it. I think it's – and the play is good. I think it's –
it's uneven. It's uneven, right? There's sometimes where it's spectacular.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I was trying to think about it before we got on, like, in my head, like, why – so I don't know if you looked at the betting lines, but up until, like, last night, I think every game had hit the under. Mm-hmm. And the under was, like, 23.5 on a lot of the games. It's like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Which, if you watch college games – 18-15. It could be, you know, some games are lower scoring, but college games are higher scoring than these games. The field's smaller, and you have 2-point lines. So, and they have the best players in the world. So why are the games lower scoring than college?
Well, one is the goalies are insane.
100%. That's the number, in my opinion, that's the number one reason.
Yeah.
But
the goalies are insane.
That's the only thing I could think of, you know, because it's like hockey, like college hockey is, you know, 4-3, 5-3, 6-5. And then you get to the NHL and it's like you can win games 1-0 because the goalies are so hard to score on. So maybe that's what it is. I think, the play is it's spotty. You know what I mean? There's just not a whole lot of chemistry, you know, yet with some of these guys. So offensively, the ball dies. They try to force something. And 52 seconds, you know, with trying to clear the ball too is sometimes only a 30 or 40 second possession. So that's pretty tough.
Right.
You know?
But it does bring spectacular moments. And
it does.
It's been so great. And I really feel like the league has really filled a void because college lacrosse has gotten so big, know, especially the tournament and all that, that, you know, when a guy like Connor Fields, typically when he would graduate, that would pretty much be it. He might play 15 years in the MLL, but nobody knows it.
Right.
Now you could follow Connor Fields and all these guys. And you know, Paul Rabel, I mean, I love Paul, and Paul's taking the game to a ridiculous level. But, I mean, how many really watched him play with the Lizards? How many really watched, you know what I mean? He became bigger than the sport almost.
But through his own right, most likely, not through the MLL.
Yeah, because he busted his ass, and he and his brother, and they figured it out, and they made it work. And thank God for him. But like now, we can watch like Tahoga, or all these guys. Like when they graduate, we're gonna watch them in the PLL, and you're gonna see.
Look what Grant Amon's done in the first couple of games. I mean, you could say he left early. He had an extra year of eligibility. He didn't go back, and he made a good choice. And he's probably gonna be, I'm sure one of the most marketable players in that league over the next 10 years.
So great.
So, I mean, you're right. I mean, I was with, one of our players, talking about one of our players that plays at Maryland. He said he'd been watching, the games. And he's like, I'm like, that's going to be you. And he goes, I hope so. You know what I mean? Like, that's just like, that's, he's a Maryland guy, wants to play for the Whip Snakes. And like, of course, it's going to be really tough to do, but like, go for it. You know what I mean?
Now you have something realistic to shoot for, something exciting.
Making 35 or 40 grand a year with health insurance, 6 months out of the year with lacrosse. Like, that sounds, I would do, I mean, my wife might leave me, but I'd do that right now for the next 25 years.
Of course. And then build your brand on NBC and on social media and get your deal with Adidas and get your deal with, whatever.
Exactly.
And go from there. I think it's awesome. I'm totally into it. I can't believe how much I'm into it.
We gotta find a way to bet on these things. I know I texted you before trying to get on the bets, but I don't know.
My
where.
Site is unbelievable because I can bet on ping pong and volleyball, but I can't bet on the PLL. And DraftKings has something, but Maryland's weird. Maryland's like a terrible state.
It said like there was only like 10 or 15 states that allowed the. So like DraftKings has like a sportsbook app or whatever, and you can, but and only certain states allow.
I need
that.
To get one of my Virginia buddies to sign up an account, and that's what you.
You
have
can do it
do.
In Virginia.
Well, that's how I have my BetUS account.
Yeah.
Drabby, my producer for the Junks. That's how I have this account.
But BetUS doesn't have
lacrosse. No, I can bet on friggin' ping pong.
I'm sure I'd lose all my money anyway. So let's just keep watching, enjoy it, and not lose our money. So
right. Well, it's kind of just all about the PLL this week.
Not a whole lot. I mean, you could talk about the debacle with the MLL, but it's not even.
I mean, it's just.
And I don't want to like downplay that because we've had MLL guys on here, and even like Kyle Harrison was on here, talked really, and Casey Powell was super involved in the league. And I know they did a lot of work to get that thing.
Yeah, I don't
want to
down
ground.
It. I don't want to.
No,
down it.
I mean, and even that, I was watching that. I was watching every game. I really was. It's just kind of a shame there, you know, right before you get into, you know, the championship games, which I thought would have been a great game between the Outlaws and the Bayhawks if that would have played out. And I know, you know, they still had to play the semifinals, but those are the two kind of big dogs going into it. And then obviously, you know, what cup three players test positive for the Bayhawks, and then the Connecticut team pulls out because of that. And
Canadians rolled.
The Canadians rolled out for the Cannons, but credit to them. I said, as a coach, I said, that's amazing that Boston pulled it together and then beat Denver, who Denver was really kind of the favorite. So look, we're talking lacrosse in the middle of July, in the middle of the pandemic.
Think about it. When was that? I mean, of all the shows we've done, we've never talked this much pro lacrosse, right? This show really isn't about pro lacrosse, really. It's more about college and high school and local.
It's about you and me. That's what this
is
about.
Yeah, right. It's about us. But yeah, like right now we're in the middle of, I mean, this could be the highlight of 2020. I mean, you know what I mean? We didn't have the college Final Four.
I know. Who the heck knows what the spring's going to bring? I mean, obviously I would hope that personally, you know, obviously we're talking about our season and other seasons going on, but yeah, I mean, we just amazing to get our sport out there. And like you said, it feels like the Olympics. It feels like the World Games. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When the World Games are on, you know, every 4 years, I'm watching them on my computer and like rooting for, you know, Team USA. And just that kind of has this feel right now. So I just can't wait
to
see.
I like your idea that we need to talk to Mike about it. We should do this at the end of every season. We should just do, you have your regular season and you can even have your championship or whatever and then have a tournament, you know, or something.
Yeah.
Let's do
it. Yeah,
I
exactly. Have pool play, and, you know, the pool play part is cool because it's like you get to see teams, like, they're not scrimmaging. They're playing for seeding and doing different things. And I love it. I love it.
All right. So when we come back, it's our pleasure. We had Paul on a few weeks ago. We're having so many legends. I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
This is your hookup this time. Big
no,
silly here.
No, but we're having Paul's brother Mike, who is this co-founder of the PLL, and he's actually the CEO. He's in the bubble, and he's going to give us some time. So when we come back, we'll talk to the CEO of Premier Lacrosse, Mike Rabel. All right, it's our pleasure to introduce our guest today, one of the most powerful men in the world of lacrosse, Dane. Former college football player at Dartmouth. He played 4 years of lacrosse at Watkins Mill. Had some opportunities, of course, to play lacrosse in college, but he stayed with football. After graduation, got into the entrepreneurship game. He was owning gyms. He later had like an investment holding company he could talk to us about in San Francisco. But he recently became one of the most important guys in the game we love of lacrosse when he and his brother launched the Premier Lacrosse League. He acts as the CEO. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Time and Room, Mike Rabel. Mike, what's up, buddy?
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on. Dude. I know you guys have many other more important things to do. I'm pumped to be on with you guys.
Oh, no. We're pumped to have you
I'm sure you're not busy at all right now.
I'm
just in a bubble, man. What else is there to do? I'm just inside a bubble.
Well, one good thing is, and you know, I don't even know where to begin, but Dane and I were talking before we got you on that, you know, I wonder what he's doing. And I go, oh, well, he's got to be schmoozing, man, because, you know, he's got to work these sponsors. And Dane's like, they're not there. And I was like, oh, you know what? That's a good point. That's a good point.
You still have to work the sponsors, though. It's they watch everything, and they should because they have a lot of different places to put their money. You guys know this better than me. But, you know, they'll cull through the content you're producing on behalf of them. They'll cull through the TV to make sure their advertising is getting the promised asset value and placement on the field. So, you know, we're constant conversation, but they're not here. So that's a little bit easier. We also don't have all of our investors here, which, you know, I got to manage that too. When we're live last season, having our investors come and making sure that they're treated as the VIPs that they are.
Right.
So it's a little less managing. It also feels oddly manufactured. I was talking to our COO, Andrew Sinnenberg, after like the second game on Saturday. And, you know, we're used to having fans and obviously we want to build that fandom up. But, you know, last year we ran 15 different weekends over 40 games with live fans. And then all of a sudden you go and you run these games and we're pumping in some crowd noise and we have music after goals and the players are out there playing harder than they ever have. And you have TV production.
Right.
And then you turn all that down and it's just completely quiet 10 minutes later.
Yeah.
And you're like, This feels incredibly manufactured.
Yeah.
So it's just a different deal, man.
But let me tell you something. It's not coming off that way. And
yeah, it's awesome.
It's really, I mean, sick. Obviously, the partnership with NBC is crucial, right? This thing doesn't work if you don't have 100%. This partnership. But I was 100%. Talking to a buddy of mine who's another lacrosse guy, and he's like, man, I freaking love it. Like, the production values are so good. I so look forward to these games. I'm going to be so pissed when this little quick little run is, we got to do it again. We got to run it back.
I'd love to.
They're truly the highlight of my day watching these games as a guy that just loves lacrosse and getting to see these guys.
That means a lot, man.
No, it's awesome. It's so well done. And you guys have done a better job, I really think, producing this television than Major League Baseball, than the NBA's done a good job. I give them credit. Like, yeah. They have somehow made that product look doable. From what I've seen so far in the preseason. But, like, I'm watching Nats games, and, you know, I love the Nats. But I'm like, I'm dying all the empty seats. But you guys, you've done a great job with all the sponsorships. You got everything tarped out, and it doesn't. And then you got the cardboard cutouts, which are awesome. Which, by the way, we needed some junks and some time and room cutouts. I'm distraught we're not there. We blew
That's
that.
My miss.
That's a next year. Hopefully
we
not
missed
next
our chance.
Year.
We missed our chance. Paul was on here, yeah.
Yeah. But the cutouts, they're great. I mean, you know, when you don't know for a fleeting second, you kind of feel like for a moment maybe there's some guys there. And then the sound, everything, it's great. You have to be thrilled with the production.
Yeah, I mean, we can always get better. I'm like a bit maniacal about the production, and it's not because I'm a production guru. I'll be the first person to say I have so much to learn about sports. I didn't in media because I didn't come from that background. But... you know, I'm going to the truck before every game and I'm like, let's test out the blare horn when a goal scored. And, you know, I was sitting in the LEP box the first game and, you know, the horns and the crowd noise, the music wasn't happening fast enough. And I'm like eyeing them up and going in with a timeout and being like, God. So it's like those things matter because all we have is our television production right now.
Right.
And our product on TV. We don't have people coming to games. So they can't feel the players there as much. And my whole thing has always been, look, I like sports. I'm not obsessed with sports. I listened to UEB a ton, you know, growing up and when I worked in DC. And I know how it means a lot. When I say it means a lot, because I know you know your sports. It's what you do for a living.
Not really.
But my thing was always, you know, Paul knows sports far better than me, and he's the genius in the room. I'm just like this business hack. But my thing was always, how do we get more people like me who enjoy sports, aren't obsessed, to become fans of the PLL. Mm-hmm. And so my thing with the broadcast is like, how do I make this so engaging? You know, how do I make the next Mike Rabel who loves football or loves baseball or basketball to like give us one chance and then get them hooked? And yeah. I've seen enough of that feedback that, you know, we have to continue pushing the envelope of under the mic. We have to push the envelope of good interviews on the field.
People love
that.
We
have to bring more cameras to the product. We shorten the field. We shorten the shot clock. I felt like there was too much fat in the game. And we just sped it up. Like I took a lot of examples from hockey. So we're always iterating on it. It means a lot that you guys say that. There's obviously ways we can improve, but you know, this was something, you know, I think your point about baseball is interesting because they're at a disadvantage because it's a legacy league. And obviously if we had their viewership numbers, we'd be ecstatic, but we don't. But the advantage we have is we're a smaller organization. We have 7 teams. They have 30 plus, right? They have these massive stadiums that they play in. Mm-hmm. And so when you see that, no matter how much fan noise they're pumping into it, it still feels empty.
Yeah.
And so we've got like a pretty small venue. It's like 5,000 seats. We put tarps over and we did the fan cutout.
It's really smart.
Sold out 500 seats. We sold them for $30, sold them out in like a day. So people feel like they're a part of it. And it's been good. It's been good so far. We still have 2 weeks, knock on wood. But you know, our protocol and our bubble's tight. So, There have been some fans that have identified where we are because we're just geotagging on social. And so there's been people trying to break into the stadium a couple times and they found out where our hotel was and they left some stuff on Paul's car. So you got to get a little tighter with security.
Right?
Nah, some little kids that want to take a picture 6 feet away.
That's so great.
But it's all good. It's all good. We're very fortunate. We have an insanely competent team of medical professionals and operation professionals that makes this thing work.
Now, talk about like the venue a little bit, because the venue is sick. You know what I mean? I know like when Paul was on here, like trying to weigh the options and ultimately picking Utah seemed like, to me, seemed like it's been a great fit, you know, even from stadium size and just being isolated. But like, what's day to day right now for the guys out there and just like that overall operation? Obviously, I'm sure a lot went into planning it, but now that you're there, is it playing out the way you thought it would? Are the guys, I know you said Wi-Fi is spotty. Is that crushing the guys' gaming ability? Like what's the day to day at the PLL summer camp?
So there's two facilities that are in our bubble. So there's the Zions Bank, RSL Academy that we've rented out the entire space. And it's focused on soccer. So it's droves of fields. I think there's like 9 fields and there's their main stadium attached to their actual academy, where there's like, it's a charter school on top of indoor facilities. There's 3 indoor turf fields that I'm standing in front of right now. There's classrooms. There's 8 locker rooms. Each team has, all 7 teams have their own locker room. They have their meeting space. There's an incredibly large fitness facility. So I feel like I work for this place, but it was important for us to find a facility where the guys could come and get workouts, have cold baths, hot baths, very strong locker rooms where they can spend time there, where they're not crunched on top of each other. And then the food here is outstanding, actually. And I think it helped that the NWSL came here before us, so they probably worked out some kinks. Mm. This is what I heard on the food side. So got a lot of compliments on the food. So staff here has done well. And then we go back to a hotel, and those are the two places. And we get big, you know, air-conditioned luxury buses that bring us back and forth, and we don't leave. And we have security that sits outside the hotel to make sure no one's leaving. We have an approved list of vendors that are on the delivery side that can only come in as long as they're abiding by the CDC standards of preparing food. So we try to keep it as airtight as we can. We've done 3 rounds of testing, and everyone that's inside these two facilities in our bubble has tested negative. And, you know, we just got to knock on wood that we keep the protocol. There'll be little sort of hacks that maybe happen here and there, but we just have to remind ourselves to wear masks. This is the first time I've taken my mask off all day. And that's just how we operate, right? And so we just got to pull this thing off, and we have about 2 more weeks. So it's been good. I think the players are happy. You know, we always want feedback on how to improve. But, you know, they're pro athletes. They're the best at what they do. I said that when I first got here. I was like, I hadn't been around the athletes since September when our season ended last year. And then they all kind of started coming in the hotel. And I said to someone, I was like, you know, it's pretty cool that we're around like the 0.5% best in the world at this thing they do, which is lacrosse.
Right.
And so we want to treat them that way.
Yeah. I'll tell you, as a fan, and, you know, I never played. Dane's a coach. Dane played, you know, at Robert Morris. So he knows better than I. But the quality of play at times is just outrageous, right? I mean, yeah. I actually expected it to be sloppier, you know, because guys haven't been able to really work out, you know. But there have been moments where it's just been insane. As when you're there sort of as like the CEO, are you freaking out, though, like if you go a few minutes without a goal scored, or, you know what I mean, or a sloppy turnover? You're like, because, you know, because I know how you could think. You're thinking, I'm trying, you know, in radio, I need to hold these guys. I need to hold the audience. Every second counts, believe it or not. You know, so I wonder if you're feeling that pressure as the CEO while your play is unfolding, like, whoa, we can't have a scoreless quarter. This is not going to work.
Right. Oh, 100%. You nailed it. I mean,
yeah.
I know the players don't prefer close games, but, you know, a 1-score game or going to overtime or a tight game all the way through 4 quarters holds ratings.
Right.
So, you know, obviously I root for that, but the play on the field is going to be the play on the field. And yeah. I think that the fact that we have only 7 teams creates, and there's only, you know, 22 paid roster spots per team. There's and you know, we're paying players, you know, average of $35,000 a year plus healthcare plus equity. And we're in the previous league, they were making $8,000 a year. There's a lot of, and you know, guys are making much more than that, but there's a lot of, competition for those roster spots. So, and I think being on a national stage as well, and what we do on social and how we source our media team, providing players assets on social and then the spotlight of being on NBC and NBC Sports Network, these guys actually showed up to training camp in better shape than I ever thought they would,
right.
Which was weird. And I said that at the beginning, I was like, man, these guys look like monsters. Some guys put on all muscle. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just because not only has the league raised the stakes from a compensation perspective, but just the platform in general,
yeah,
of broadcast and digital, these guys need to be at their best. And so that's just going to raise the level of play like you're noticing. And then it's going to translate to the field. And then the fact we only have 7 teams is going to create more parity in between the lines.
You guys,
it's only going to get better, Eric. I mean, like, this is like
each game, you
know, each game, like this, for as well as last year went for the first year, like, you know, and Mike, you correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, practice wise, the guys were still probably on a 1 practice a week basis, right? Or 1 or twice a week coming in and then hitting their weekend venue. We're now like, they're together every single day with some of the best coaches in the world. Now you have the, you know, a lot of the players are college coaches as well. So you got all these guys in it. And imagine, I'm sure they're doing a good job spacing the days out and not making it all about lacrosse every single hour, but you have 2 days, you can do film. You guys aren't, the guys aren't capped on times of what they can do, right? I mean, it's up to the coaches to what, how they want to develop the teams.
Yeah, yeah, we have.
They don't have a union. You can work them into the ground, right, Mike?
Right, exactly. Film sessions at 11. Wake up call at 2 a.m. Trust me, that's like summer camp. You're ready to like pick up your son. Just like wants to get out of camp because he's been there for too long.
Sometimes I think a union might be a good thing because then you know then they could we could have just a couple conversations.
One voice.
Rather than hundreds of conversations.
We know a guy.
Yeah,
we know a guy that can help you with that.
That's true.
Well, I mean, I think that we, you know, I was doing some research this past year because. You know, I was just like, you know, what happens when we get a PA? At some point there'll be a PA. And right now we don't, we have good relationships. Not that you can't, it's adversarial, but oftentimes people think like, oh, once a union happens, that means that things have gone awry. For us, I was looking at some comps of the MLS, and the MLS took them 9 years before their PA, the MLS PA started. And then it took them 2 years after that, just for their first feather in the cap was getting healthcare.
Right,
for their players. We already have healthcare for all of our players.
Right,
you know, it's part of the plan to you know overpay players to raise the profile, and then as our revenues grow and the sport grows and the league grows, then you know we'll start making you know a profit margin that makes sense for sustainability. But you know the guys are treated incredibly well right now. Obviously, there's always things we can get better, and you know we really try to have those sort of face to face conversations with each person, and each person's voice matters. So it's a balance, right? You know, there's times where guys don't want to wear a mic and audience is asking for them, or the players don't want someone to wear a mic. And, you know, we got to go in there and say, hey, this is kind of a league decision. So we're getting stronger around stuff, but all these types of things are champagne problems because it means it's working.
Right. So let's talk specifically about Matt Gaudette, and he got mic'd up, and, you know, it blew a lot of people away because they're like, oh my God, this young guy's talking. And obviously the guys, they wanted to kind of ref that on their sort of their own. And then they said he didn't want to be mic'd up for that second game. Was that truly his choice, or was that you, Mike Rabel, stepping in and going, no, we're not going to mic up the rookie again?
Yeah, no, he actually didn't want to be mic'd up. I think he wanted a break. I think that it was an intensified magnifying glass on him. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, it was strategic by him to do what he did.
He knew what he was doing.
I'm not condoning what he said to Blaze.
Right.
Blaze was the best goalie last year. He's a great person. You know, but the reality is that stuff happens all the time on the field.
Sure.
I think the issue was when I broke it down psychologically for our team, I said, look, it wasn't like Ryder Garnsey didn't talk shit to Jared Newman and tell him he sucked last year when he was mic'd up. It was just the fact that Boyle called from the booth on the mic, asked Gaudette what was happening, why they were on the streak, and then he's talked about Blaze in front of Blaze, but not directly to Blaze. And I think that piece right there sort of set the alarm bells off for everyone and said, you know, why can't you know, psychologically he should have said it directly to Blaze, and I'm sure he did all game. But at the end of the day, you know, our job as a league is to promote what happens in between the lines. That happened to get caught on a mic. Obviously, I know that there was some ill will there, and you know, we've been sort of having conversations around, you know, sportsmanship and what's right and what's not right. But, you know, they also, you know, take it to the field, and these are all pros, and end of the day, Chrome's 2-0, and we want to, you know, protect Matt's, his safety, but, you know, he also is strategic about what he's doing, and he knows that's always been part of his game ever since he was at Yale.
Does he know, did he have a relationship with Blaze, or was he just talking shit to him? He didn't even know him.
I don't know that. I honestly don't know. My guess is that they probably weren't very close, but I don't
definitely
know.
Definitely not anymore.
I know they sat down after the game and hashed it out a bit, but, you know, it was
really?
Viral.
Give us that scoop. Was that good?
I watched. Basically, I think Blaze was wanted to have that conversation with him after it kind of went viral immediately after the game. And, you know, they sat outside of the hotel for, you know, 10 minutes and hashed it out and were pros about it. And,
I'll tell you what, Matt handled it really well when the guys kind of took it upon themselves. And you know, I think, and you guys handle it, and you could talk about this. I know Coach Dane wanted to touch on it about the suspension today that you guys announced. Because I thought, like, you know, when he got crunched right there on the crease by everybody, I was like, all right, that's fair, I get it. It's within the flow of the play. And then Garrett pops him once, okay, but then it's after the whistle, to the head a couple times. That's where I thought he crossed the line. I think you guys probably thought
100%.
That too.
Was that a difficult decision? I was kind of surprised he only got 2 minutes.
And who's making those decisions, Mike? Is that you? Is that a team? Yeah. Is Paul part of that? I imagine not, but...
No, Paul's not part of that. So essentially what happened was, you know, the hit was a lacrosse play, the first hit, right? It was probably a little bit too aggressive. He's had some hits like that before where he gets a minute penalty. But, you know, that, and then what happened was the camera caught the two dirty hits to his helmet, with a cross check, but the refs were actually didn't see it. They saw the first one, and then the second one was really bad. And then they didn't, and then when they go to the booth, we didn't have the sky cam, and then we didn't have the steady cam. All we had was the sideline cam. So they couldn't see.
They couldn't really see.
The refs actually couldn't see the second dirty hit. So they gave him 2 minutes. Our fighting policy is actually, if you're the aggressor and you square up and you keep your gloves and helmet on and you throw a punch, it's 5 minutes unreleasable. You know, our refs are working hard. It's the same crew. They're in the island with us. They're on the island with us. They're in the bubble with us. You know, they know they missed it. They're cool. We got them. But they got to get better. So we did a film review with them today. On as far as the discipline went, so there's a disciplinary committee. It's in the player handbook that everyone knows who's on that. It's myself, Rachel DiCecco. She's a Tour Time winner. She played at Princeton, and she also runs our PLL Academy business. And so she's actually here on site with us. And then Seth Tierney, who's the head coach at Hofstra University, who's the head of lacrosse on-site operations and coaches. So the three of us kind of sit. I'm the least technical in lacrosse. I bring sort of just like the mindset of the business mindset, and then the three of us have a vote, we reviewed the film immediately after the game. I already had the file on my computer. We sat down, and then as soon as we kind of all three saw it, it was a pretty easy decision.
It's wild because as a viewer, I do kind of like the drama though, you know, and I have felt
good storyline.
Yeah, and I do feel like in last year, maybe it's changed. Have you always had that policy? I'm surprised that if guys square up, it's 5 minutes unreleasable, because I've felt like there's been an undercurrent of kind of encouraging a little hockey, you know, let's get after it a little bit, a little of that, you know, because we're trying to build something here.
Yeah, was Epple your first suspension? Did you guys suspend anyone last year?
We suspended Brett Queener last year for the hit to Jules Hennenberg.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Sort of the end of the season. So it wasn't the first time he sort of cross-checked into the helmet.
Yep,
it was a smaller fine. So he got lead max fine and then suspended for a game as well. You could argue that even though it sounds like one game, you know, when a shortened season is actually pretty meaningful. When
when his team's 0-2.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So you know, look, we've had this rule, same rule since last year, and we wrote our entire rule book, which was hectic and hard, and because you just want to be right and you don't want to make mistakes there. And you know, we reimagined the game and consolidated some of the field and shock, like I talked about. But as far as fighting, you know, we obviously player health and safety is number one. But fighting is we don't condone it. It is, as long as the helmet and gloves are on and you don't hit someone from behind, you necessarily aren't subject to a penalty or ejection. You can have up to a 5 minute unreleasable. And so that's when you saw the fight last year between Blaze and Nick Ocello in Chicago, where he kind of body slammed him and Ocello hit him with a cross check while he had his helmet on. Both of those guys got 5 minutes unreleasable. There was no fines levied because they played within the rules of squaring up, kept their gloves and helmets on.
I feel like
that's a phenomenal rule, by the way. You could just see a straight brawl with his helmet. It's like locker box. I know at Watkins Mill, they had to have that. Back in the day.
Oh, man, way too many fights at Watkins Mill, man.
Yeah, exactly. That used to be the thing. You used to square up in the locker.
It was nuts.
Yeah. Hey, God darn it. You brought something to my attention. Now I've lost my train of thought.
Fighting
with the refs, Eric, why you think with the refs just on the side, like physicality? I was just watching, trying to catch up, like I was telling Eric, with how much lacrosse there is in a short period of time, and I got like two kids. I'm like trying to like watch all the games, so I'm recording them, and so I was trying to catch up on a game before I got on here. But from a physicality standpoint, are the refs told anything different? Because if you watch the PLL, in my opinion, like the checks that are thrown on guys' wrists, you know, repeatedly at the college level or even at the MLL level, you know, the other league, like
the minor league.
Like basically I don't know if those would fly, but these guys are just, I mean, they're a hammer check.
They're killing people.
Killing people's wrists. And I know, like, and I, as a coach, I love it because, like, I pride myself in, like, playing a tough sport. And, you know, you see the, you know, attackmen, the Ryder Gardens, the other worlds, they complain that they're getting slashed. And I'm like, this is amazing. This is the coolest thing. Are the refs told anything differently or just kind of try to let the game go as much as they can? Or,
I mean, there's definitely slashes are one of those weird things in lacrosse. There's a subjective, it's a bit subjective depending on the ref, right? What we say is that as long as the check is placed within the chest area while they're holding the stick, but it is generally going to be okay unless someone completely winds up and it's just malicious. If they're checking someone on the back or in the helmet or the legs, then that's going to be a slash. Generally speaking, though, it's like as long as it's in sort of their frame, their front frame, the neck to stomach while they're in possession of the
ball.
They
are wailing, though.
I mean, they're wailing. Whatever you're doing, Mike, don't overthink it. You let it keep going. But maybe it's the production quality too of all the mics. I mean, you see that.
It's a bit of it too.
With what UFC's doing too, you know.
Sure, we bring more camera. I mean, we're investing in production, right? And that was always my thing. Is you know, watching Paul, I would you know have a firsthand look at the highest level of lacrosse when he was playing in the other league and in college, and I was like, man, these guys are pros. These guys are athletes. They're so competitive. I can only understand that if I'm live through the TV production that they had or the digital production they had. I couldn't understand that. And so when we're bringing more cameras, and we're miking up the entire field. We have mics lined around the field, miking up players in our helmets. You hear it all, right? Mm-hmm. And so then you're like, whoa, this is actually a lot more intense. So what, one of my pet peeves, obviously, and people call out lacrosse and they say it's not a real sport or there's, you know, pansies playing. It's like, watch one of our PLL games and then tell me if you still think that.
No, that's crazy. And that's what I lost my train of thought on. I wanted to talk about, I thought in particular, these games have been really chippy. Like these guys, you know, and I'm like, wow, man, is it because they haven't played in so long? Is it because they're all sort of sick of seeing each other? Or is it just they're just the uber competitiveness of it? But like we're good friends with Pat Harbison, DeMatha guy. I went to DeMatha.
And
unbelievable guy. He's in there scrapping with everybody. I mean, he's ripping helmets off dudes. I mean.
Oh, yeah, he's tough.
He's tough as nails.
Yeah. I saw Brody Merrill in one game just cross-check someone repeatedly four times into the back.
No one will square up against Brody Merrill, though.
No, they shouldn't. And he took his helmet off. He looked like he had been in the wilderness for like 2 months. I know. I wouldn't either.
Not wrong.
Have you noticed that, though? That I feel like these games are really chippy. Like, wow.
Oh, yeah.
From the beginning.
So I gave a keynote at the beginning just to like address the players. I did it at training camp, and we had the coaches on and our staff and virtual. It's always weird doing that. But what I said to him, one of the first things I said, I was like, look, guys, I was part of 2-a-days when I played college football and, you know, you're pent up on campus, you can't go anywhere and it's a month long and you're just hacking each other and you're fighting each other every single day. And then you're also going to the same hotel. We have to be in the same hotel because of our bubble and you're going to the same facility and you're in the same, you know, you're not locker rooms, you're crossing each other in the hallways. I was like, it's going to get intense and you're on national broadcast and everyone's going to be talking about it. It's going to be intense. And you're going to want to hate each other and you're going to get in fights and on the field, but it's important to leave it on the field. And let me tell you an example of a sport that does that well is rugby. Rugby, they go to war with each other. Mm-hmm. And then after the game, it's part of their culture that you drink beers together and you put your arms around each other and then whatever happens on the field is left on the field. And so I told them of that. And I said, let's try to remind ourselves that we're all in this together. We're all sort of teammates in life, especially during these times. And it's important for us to remember what happens on the field is leave it on the field, especially in these tight quarters in this bubble. So obviously it's getting a little more intense. It's definitely tense. I'm noticing guys walking by each other and I'm not saying what's up anymore. But that's just how it's going to be. So.
I wanted to get in a little bit to sort of how you got to this point. And a lot of it is through, I mean, obviously you're your own entrepreneur and everything. But it's my understanding that you were really behind Paul's sort of social growth and how he sort of individually marketed himself and became Paul Rabel. How much of a role did you have in that, in the idea, hey, start your YouTube channel or, you know, whatever, start your video log or whatever it is.
Yeah.
How involved were you? And then how were you able to monetize that in a way that others just really weren't? How did you figure that out?
Yeah. I mean, for me, so I'll never take credit for anything Paul, has done. He is, a better, you know, believe it or not, you know, I think he's one of the best lacrosse players to ever play, but he's a better executive and then time will tell than he will be a lacrosse player, especially when it comes to sports and media. I like to quietly say he's becoming the Elon Musk of sports media. Just his, like, his creativity, his understanding for nuance, his ability to elevate, his ability to, like, take in a bunch of different information sets and start thinking longer term about where sports is going in the landscape. He's also an internal optimist. He's great on camera. He's fluid. He studies, he preps. And so he's an incredible exec. And so for me, before he was an exec with me, I went out and was like, I can't. One of the biggest reasons why I'm an entrepreneur, it's not because it's glamorous. It's actually horrible. It's just so much stress all the time. It's just because, like, my own ego, I sometimes strongly dislike working for other people. Mm-hmm. And so that's a characteristic a lot of times why you kind of go do stuff on your own. And obviously if someone's really competent and empathic, I'll work for them. But that was one of the early reasons why I just wanted to kind of go do it on my own. And so as being an entrepreneur, I didn't go to business school. I had a liberal arts background. I just started building things, like you said, EB, gyms. And so when Paul was starting to bud as a lacrosse player, he jumped on YouTube early, and I was in Silicon Valley, and I knew this thing called Instagram, and I was like, you got to get on Instagram. This is the next thing. He actually got the handle P Rabel. And then Paul Rabel, then we got that. And so he was an early adopter, and he actually took a ton of flack for being a personality and for investing as an individual, because I wasn't part of lacrosse before, and everyone's like, oh, look at Paul, he cares about the camera. But he was doing it purposefully. And then the next big leap he took was when I sat down with him and I was like, look, you have good sponsorships individually, you have this big platform of how you're playing, you're saving money, you're living in Baltimore. Think about taking some of that money and reinvesting it into a team around you. So that's all I said, and he did the rest, right? He took his own balance sheet, invested, hired a chief of staff, hired a producer, and then he got some office space in Baltimore and built a little team around him. They're able to chop videos, start building like a online camp, building physical camps, and investing in that digital presence of who he was. And so that's what helped sort of build his platform, is him investing in a company around him. And he was one of the first folks to do that.
Yeah. And then how do you do that? Because you guys obviously kind of use a lot of those blueprints. Like, you guys are just so huge on social, right? Mm-hmm. And you make sure all these guys have their Instagram pages. You guys are unbelievable on Twitter and Instagram, during games, all the time, right? All the behind the scenes acts. But how do you monetize that? Like, you know, like I saw your press release, like, you did whatever you did on NBC, and then you had 36 million, you know, impressions. On social media, or whatever, right? How do you turn that into money?
Yeah. So it's the same way you do traditional sponsorships on TV. You go to brands and you say, look, one of the great things about the PLL is we have direct relationships with players. We own all the teams, we own all the marks. And we have great relationships with players, and we cut players in on an advertising deal. So we go to a big advertiser, whether it's an agency or the brand direct, and we say, hey, we have this idea that fits really well with your brand. So for example, Athletic Brewing, which is a fast growing non-alcoholic brewing company, or Utz Chips. You guys know Utz. We grew up on crab chips, right? Mm-hmm. And we go to them and say, hey, we love your brand. Here's some ideas of how we can authentically integrate the PLL, all the teams, all the marks, and the players into this creative. And then we pitch it, and this is where it's going to live on. And this is how many impressions, this is how many engagements we think it's going to get. Right. And so then they think about it. We go back and forth. We get to an agreement, and then we execute it. We did one for Utz where, you know, they're a huge Major League Baseball sponsor. And sort of, we were kind of this guy who runs their organization, their marketing, digital marketing organization, Sean Adams. He came to our Baltimore event, and he loves lacrosse, and it's a long sales cycle. And eventually, in the middle of COVID, you know, we were able to send him some Atlas gear and got Paul on a FaceTime with him. And he was finally like, all right, I'll pay attention to you guys. You guys are working hard for this. And we're like, just give us one shot. And so we did a cheese ball eating contest, because they have the big things of cheese ball, right? And we had built a bracket, and it was all live on Instagram. And we had our host, RJ Kaminsky, host it. And we found eight guys, two each, who went and squared off against each other. And then they went to a virtual war, and they're just doing cheese ball toss. We got a ton of engagement. Their social media following, because we did a following piece of it, grew like 25% on Instagram. And they were like, this is like unlike anything I've ever seen. And so we just got a shot on goal, and it hit. And so then now we're doing a bigger partnership where they're an official snack partner of ours now. So it's using our digital and social where we can sort of, a lot of it's creative, man. Like, you have to come with an idea. You have to be able to execute it, because we're too small. We're not the NBA. People are dying to knock on our door. We're knocking on other doors. But at the same time, bigger brands are starting to pay attention and saying, hey, this is a price point that we can afford. This is a sport that has demographics that are young, that we like, that we can't reach in any other sport. And this media team, they can execute we talk about interaction rate. So impressions are good, but they're also sometimes empty calories. You can just do paid advertising. Like, if we wanted to market this podcast right now, we could just record it and just spend a bunch of money on YouTube, right? Mm-hmm. And we could get the impression level we want, but you can't buy interactions. You can't buy people liking, you can't buy people commenting. So the PLL actually has the highest interaction rate in sports. We have like a 7% interaction rate. And so we go out and actually sell that. And we say, if we do a branded content campaign with you, people are actually going to interact with our posts, which means they're interacting with your brand, which is more of an acquisition metric rather than just like a brand awareness metric like impressions are.
Where are you now in terms of like advertisers this year versus last year? Like, what? How many did you have? Yeah. I mean, I'm just fascinated by it. Seems like you're totally growing.
Yeah, we're definitely. I mean, we brought on an official insurance partner in Progressive. I'm sure you've seen the activation with them. We have them on our goals. They have them on field. We're doing LED. I mean, honestly, they have some pretty great commercials. I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
Like their commercials are actually pretty funny. So that was a huge partnership of ours. It was a big partner. Insurance category is a big one. We were able to bring on the snack partner in Utz. We actually did a campaign already with Chipotle. We did one with Bose. We did a branded content campaign recently in there. Our headphone partner as well. So we're bringing on bigger blue chip brands. And then we have Adidas, we have Gatorade, who's an incredible partner. We have Capital One, our bank partner. Vineyard Vines is our official outfitter. So we have like big blue chip brands that never spent in the sport before. Obviously there's a lot of categories that are still open. And you know, there's a lot of different ways that brands will come in with us. They'll maybe buy some TV ads. They'll like what they see. We deliver for them and then we'll do something on social and then maybe next year something bigger, right? Make it an official category. So a lot of it's just proving it out, man. It's just like anything in life. It's like, you're not going to go get those big fish right away. You got to get the little ones and then you know, you grow with them. And we've just been fortunate to have some pretty good blue chip partners that help us as much as we help them. Obviously they give us dollars, but then a bigger part of that too is how they market us. You know, I think in particular Gatorade and Vineyard Vines also market the PLL to their audiences, which is a big piece of that. Right. So, I think we've been fortunate. We have a lot of work to do, but it's been good so far.
You guys are grinding for sure. And I think as you guys try to wrap up, not even wrap up, but finish what you started in Utah now, have you started to even think about next year? You know what I mean? Because I'm sure as like, someone that's trying to run a league where you think you have a format that works, you know, with the weekends and different locations, and then all of a sudden COVID comes and throws a wrench in everything. So have you even looked towards next year as far as you try to get back to what would be, I guess, the old normal? I know, Eric, you hate that. Or new normal. Yeah, I know you
hate
that.
We're not doing new normal. We're going back to the old normal.
I would love the old normal.
Yeah.
I miss my friends.
I don't want to look past the championship series because it's like Eric and I said, it's so sick. But I just, hopefully it gives you a lot more traction going into next year. I think it will because you have so many eyes on the sport right now. But
for sure. I mean, that's the hope. I think, my job as a leader is to always think about, you know, the next 6 to 12 months and just like, that's what I've always tried to push myself to do. It's obviously oversimplifying it, but I have to be thinking about where do we need to be? How do we get there? What other new verticals can we go into? And a big piece of our business is live sports and you know, having fans and the academy business we run, the merchandise we sell on site. And that's obviously taken a massive hit. So, you know, it's a little more difficult to understand kind of where we're going to be. I think there's a lot of misinformation out there about COVID. I want to keep politics out of it, but there's not a clear source of mm-hmm. information that we can trust out there right now about mm-hmm. sort of this is where we're going. Everyone's being discredited on both sides all the time. And so for us, you know, planning to get back to what 2019 was can be difficult. So, you know, we're laser focused on the championship series. The championship game is obviously August 9th on NBC. We want to make sure we keep a tight bubble. And then, you know, I have been having conversations of like, if fans can't get back in stands, or even if we get a vaccine and there's still hesitation around going to big events, you know, what does that mean for us? Right. How do we think about our business in that world? And so what will happen most likely as soon as it's over, we'll have two versions of, you know, 2019, look-alike versus like, what happens to us in a same world as 2020 where fans are too hesitant, and how does our business sort of adjust there?
Well, you certainly figured out a way to do both, right?
Yeah. And I've been to a lot of lacrosse tournaments. I don't think lacrosse fans are afraid. I just came from a club tournament with, you know, 25 teams and
they'll come.
The thing is lacrosse fans are great and we love the lacrosse fans and they're diehards and, but we're not going to get to the place of growth that we want to get to unless we have net new fans. And that's mm-hmm. always been my thing since day one. And that's why we're doing a partnership with DraftKings, who is our official betting partner of this year. And they're holding lines, and I forgot to mention them, but DraftKings has been a great partner. We're able to bring them in, and you can go on there and you can go on their DraftKings sportbook and bet lines right now.
Well, also your partnership with Barstool, right? Well, that's through the Churning Group or whatever, right? That's really,
yeah, it's more of just a friendly, with Erica, and, you know, obviously Big Cat, you know, it's the relationships with their people. And, you know, trying to make sure that, you know, there's a balance of, you know, them helping, you know, spread our message, and also, you know, bringing them in to a halftime show on NBC to bring their personalities to life, which is a big plus up for them as well. So it's always sort of, what are our assets? How do we help out? These platforms are bigger than us. But, you know, we have to bring in those new fans, or we're not going to get that growth. You know, I have to convince the hardcore basketball fan to get lacrosse a chance when there's bad rap about lacrosse for unknown reasons. It's just sort of happened over the last couple of years. And so how do we change that with the PLL? How do I get them to give us a chance, right? So well, that's a big thing for us.
I thought it was brilliant. I mean, obviously, lacrosse always brings out Belichick, and you guys did, and that's fine. Yeah. But then bringing in Breeze was next level, yeah. right? Because he's so good. He's so good with the media. He's so savvy. He loves the sport, clearly. We need more guys like that. So I don't know. We got to have some NBA dads out there or something. You know what I mean? Like,
we got one coming up. I've been working on something. So yeah
because that's really helpful.
He comes from the hip-hop space. So it's someone that you would never think –
right.
Played lacrosse, and he's a big figure in hip hop. So we'll have to have
a guessing game, Eric.
With all of our hip hop knowledge.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys 100% know who he is, though.
Okay, 100%. good. Well, listen, I don't want to take any more of your time. We could talk to you for hours. It's a busy night for you guys. You got a big game tonight. It's too late. I'm pissed at you for doing it so late, but I get it.
Sorry.
I'm recording, so don't worry.
Good.
Mike, thank you so much.
Thank
I really
you, man.
appreciate it. We'll have to do it again.
Appreciate
get an
you
update.
Guys having me on.
Yeah,
anytime,
thank you, pal.
Anytime, fellas.
All right.
Really appreciate it, guys.
That's Mike Rabel, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.